We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Today's podcast is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. If you're looking for a place to bet football this weekend or even tomorrow at 3:40 in the afternoon when the Ravens are scheduled to take on the Steelers, go to mybookie.ag and use my promo code KevinDC. They will match your deposit halfway all the way up to $1,000. Simply put, if you deposit $800, they're going to give you $400 additional dollars to play with. MyBookie.ag is fair, fair lines, fair pricing, and you'll get paid if you win. Trust me, if you've never bet before, you got to find a reputable shop, and MyBookie is one of them to ensure you get paid. They've got a sports book, they've got a live betting casino, and a horse book as well. In-game bets, always, every prop bet you can think of, mybookie.ag. And use my promo code KevinDC, and they'll match your deposit halfway up to $1,000.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Cooley's with me today. He's got an offensive film breakdown from the Thanksgiving Day game where the Washington football team destroyed Dallas. We got his recap as part of the Friday show. But before we get to that today, I actually had somebody on from Philadelphia this morning, the guy that writes and covers the Eagles for The Athletic, Zach Berman, just because there was this story, Cooley, yesterday about Doug Peterson being in trouble. Like Doug Peterson saying he hasn't even received assurances that he will be here through the rest of the year. And I thought that was just shocking. And of course, their performance the other night against Seattle, you know, take away the incredible backdoor cover that Philadelphia got on the Hail Mary at the end and then the two-point conversion, was really abysmal offensively. Carson Wentz is a mess offensively. And it would look, you know, to me anyway, I think Philadelphia is out of it, even though they're only a half game, you know, behind Washington and New York, with the Packers coming up and the Saints coming up and the Cardinals coming up before they finish with Dallas and Washington. I just don't see it with them, even though Peterson, you know, in the past has gotten it done at the end of the year. But isn't that shocking to you? Twofold, one, Peterson, and then two, you know, how Carson Wentz has regressed so incredibly?
Yeah, it is shocking to me. I think that you look at them and you really think that they're a team that should be there. It's been 3 years since that Super Bowl run, and they have been really average, if not bad, for the most part, over the last couple of years, and you can attribute a ton of it to injuries, and I'm sure they can do that as well this year. The Wentz thing is, I think, fascinating. As I watched that game the other night, I thought, if you could get that dude and there was value in Carson Wentz that it wasn't a first-round pick, my God, I think he's still a good quarterback. If something's missing there, and, I mean, we can get into that this season, but something's missing with coaching, and maybe it's the loss of Frank Reich. Maybe it's the loss of DeFilippo, or Flip, as everyone calls him. So I'm sure it's Filippo, because those are two excellent coaches. And right. So now you're talking about a quarterback and his third different quarterbacks coach or offensive coordinator. And granted, I think Peterson calls all the plays, but still, like, to have that transition from two guys that he probably loved and trusted to go to a third dude is not an easy thing. I don't know, man. I mean, I thought as I watched it, Carson Wentz would be a phenomenal pickup for anybody that needed a quarterback.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
And I just, I do. I think there's something to him. I know that he turns the ball over a ton right now, and that there's been some risk plays, but there's also so many high reward plays from Wentz, and I do think he's a smart quarterback. The Peterson thing's really, it really is fascinating. And I think we talked about this the other day. It's like this immediate spark of creativity comes from Andy Reid's system. And then all of a sudden, it's not there. Like the Eagles were so creative 3 years ago, and Nagy and the Bears were so creative 2 years ago. And both of those coaches, after they went through their first offensive coordinator and their first initial staff, it's like, bleh. I'm not impressed by either of those offenses with like any form of continued innovation. So maybe that's a lot of Andy Reid. And maybe you're worried about how good Andy is, and maybe the other guys are. I don't know, man.
No, it's a strange situation because as I was talking to this guy from Philadelphia, and he was saying several things that made sense. Number one, they have been a very injured team this year offensively, especially, you know, up front, you know, Brandon Brooks and the other offensive linemen that they've lost during the course of the year. They were without Jason, you know, Jason Peters had to get moved. The offensive line's been a disaster. They haven't had Zach Ertz. Their skill position players have been primarily more out than in.
Well, non-existent.
Yeah, and you know, but then he pointed to something that really is interesting because, you know, he said, look, they haven't drafted particularly well in recent years. They took J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in the third round, I guess, 2 years ago, or second round, when there were the guys like McLaurin out there. It's easy to say that. Now, they took Jalen Reagor this year, the pick before the Vikings took Justin Jefferson, who could be the you know, NFC Rookie of the Year. They took a quarterback in the second round in Jalen Hurts this year. So he thinks there's a lot of blame to go around. But, you know, if you put that side by side with the following – Doug Peterson, first of all, they won the Super Bowl in 2017. They then went to the playoffs in 2018. And let's not forget, in that particular season, they got hot at the end of the year, won three games in a row to get there, and they had Foles again. The Bears missed a field goal in the playoffs. And then, you know, for them to advance in the first round. And then they had New Orleans dead to right in that divisional round game to get back to the NFC Championship game. They were very close to getting back to the NFC Championship game. And then last year, you know, Peterson, in his third consecutive year, they win their final four games of the regular season. They advanced to the postseason. By the way, Wentz had a good season last year. He had a very good season last year. It wasn't like it was just that year where he was on his way to the MVP when Foles replaced him and they won the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz last year ended up throwing 27 touchdowns and 7 picks for the season. Like, he had a really good season last year, completed 64% of his passes, threw for over 4,000 yards. They win their final four games last year, and then he got hurt in the playoff game against Seattle. I thought, and I remember saying this, in watching that game, it's funny, that playoff game last year against Seattle was very similar to the Monday night game they played the other night, that if he didn't get hurt, I think Philadelphia would have won that playoff game, and they would have been into the divisional round, the final four of the NFC once again. And here we are, you know, less than a year later, and they're talking about Peterson being gone and Wentz, you know, being finished somehow. It's so funny about the NFL. You just brought up Matt Nagy. The year they went to the postseason and they beat the Eagles, or they lost to the Eagles, excuse me, in the first round of the postseason when their kicker missed a short field goal at the end of the game. They were talking about Nagy, how innovative he was and how he had used Trubisky and how the Bears were going to be a good team for years to come. Mm-hmm. It's just proven every year that the league changes so dramatically year to year, if not week to week.
I mean, the the Nagy thing, and to some extent the Peterson thing, really, the way why I'm saying this to you is I think there's some lack of innovation. Is I love to go around the league and just watch film, and sometimes you start in the first quarter. It's usually where I like to start. It's kind of first quarter stuff, week in, week out. And 2017, 2018, man, I drew up a ton of Bears plays, Eagles plays. I'm like, these dudes got some good stuff.
Yeah,
quarterbacks,
right.
Easy throws. They got. And the last couple of years, I'm like, recycle. Copycat. I mean, it really has seemed like a recycle environment in those two teams. And I don't, and the Chiefs aren't, you can watch the Chiefs and you're like, oh boy, look at this stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I blame Peterson to some extent. I mean, you said what that guy's been talking about, but no Lane Johnson, no Jason Peters, who's been hurt. But I mean, you have to start moving on from a guy like that.
Yeah.
Their other dude, Brandon Brooks, is a really good guard. He's hurt. They signed Deshaun Watson. You knew he was going to get hurt. He's always hurt. Alshon Jeffrey's an injury problem guy. I mean, he's been a problem. They've had a huge contract with Wentz, but you had to pay him a contract, so you got to work around him. You draft a guy like Rager, who's hurt for a big part of this year. I mean, is it Howie Roseman or is it Doug Peterson?
Yeah,
the funny thing about all of this is the staple of the Eagles through every part of it has been their defense.
I think it's a really good defense right now. And Zach Berman, who covers the team, said they've had some moments where they've been part of the issue. But, you know, I was watching the other night, man, and I'm like, God, they've got good players on defense. I mean, like, Derek Barnett's turning into a big-time, you know, player. He was a first-round pick, mm-hmm. Let's not forget. And I see...
Tennessee, right? Wasn't he a Tennessee guy?
Derek Barnett was Tennessee, yeah. And Jim Schwartz is a good defensive coordinator, you know? He's always...
Right.
Gotten it done. But, you know, the other thing about Carson Wentz, and I think I said this yesterday, I had Galdi on the podcast yesterday, and he really does have the yips. You know, he is very skittish. He feels like he's going to get sacked, it seems like, on every drop back. Sometimes when there isn't even pressure there, he is acting as if there's pressure there. And then as a thrower, he's been wildly inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. I just don't know if it's him. If he has you could see disappointment on his face throughout. Like, you
I know.
Can see it's just killing him right now. Like, I actually do think he's a competitor.
I do too.
He cares. And I know he knows he's got it. That's the crazy thing. Like, he knows he's got it. It's not, I don't know.
Can you imagine if they
were a really interesting team? But to your point, they backdoored into the playoffs the last couple. They could still backdoor into this division. They just got to find a way to win a couple games.
They could. His contract, you know, basically, their out is after next year, not this year with him. But it's funny that you said what you said, because I kind of feel the same way, and I think I said this yesterday, that if for whatever reason they decided to move on from him, let's just say Philadelphia ended up, you know, going 3-12-1, like they lost mm-hmm. out, which is a possibility. They could. And they ended up having a top five pick, and they had a chance at, you know, Zach Wilson or Justin Fields after Trevor Lawrence went, and they decided to go quarterback, you know, after, by the way, taking Jalen Hurts in the second round. And they tried to move. It would be hard to move Carson Wentz in that contract right now. Next year, you know, he is a cap hit of $34 million next year. But that, you know, a lot of that obviously would be a Philadelphia cap hit. You know, the team that you traded him to, you'd be picking up that base salary of $15 million. And you might have to eat some of the cap for the Eagles in a move. But I'm with you. Like, if he became available and I did not have an answer at quarterback, I would certainly.
I wouldn't second guess it. I wouldn't even second guess it. And I wouldn't care if
the injury thing, though, would bother me. He's gotten injured a lot.
The injury thing is going to bother you, and the potential to have to negotiate a new contract very soon is the other thing that's going to bother you. But if you really believe that he's the guy and he has a healthy season, it wouldn't hurt you to eat the cap next year.
Well, he's under contract through 2024. But the out opportunity where, you know, the dead cap money and the remaining base salary.
Yeah. The Eagles out opportunity.
Exactly.
Yeah, correct. I think he's a good player. I think he's a good player. I know he's struggling right now. I know the Eagles are struggling. They have massive glaring issues across that offense where they're a JV offense to some extent. And I'm not saying that Carson Wentz is playing great, and I'm not saying that Peterson's making great calls for them. But the other thing that's crazy about Peterson is like this whole risk fourth down thing.
I'm
all about it. But like when you need two scores at the end of the game, in one of them could be a field goal. Don't go for it on fourth down. Get the field goal.
It was we went through this yesterday. The net of it is they had two fourth downs in the fourth quarter with an offense that was struggling. And, you know, it was 17-9 the first time, a defense that was playing well against Seattle. And actually, you know, at times made Seattle look like a two-man team, which was – actually, I thought Chris Carson ran well, and I thought but DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson – are really, you know, spectacular players. I mean, God, is Metcalf good.
No doubt.
Boy, did you whiff on Metcalf.
No, you know what was funny? Somebody actually tweeted me today because, I don't know, someone on ESPN or something talked about Metcalf, and they said his route tree is still really limited.
Metcalf's is?
Like, yeah, I think he can do about it whatever anyone wants him to do right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. If his only route's a go ball and he catches it about two out of three times, he's going to be on my team. Yeah. No, you are right. But that was what I whiffed on in college, too, is you just didn't see him do anything.
No. And think about it.
Besides run vertical, and obviously he ran with the ball really well, but you just didn't see it. That I whiffed.
You know, and
too bad.
I mean, he and A.J. Brown on the same team. That's really.
I know.
And
A.J. Brown, and I think part of why I didn't like Metcalf was because when you watched Ole Miss, A.J. Brown was a freaking machine.
Yeah, he
was. That dude at Ole Miss ran every route. He was all over. Like, he was balls to the wall every play. And then you're like, and then there's this other fast dude. And he is really fast. But like, you watched A.J. Brown on the same film, and you're like, yeah, this isn't even a decision here.
Yeah, I'm going back to that year to see what they did against Bama. With the two of them,
DK had an 80 yard reception on the first series of the game, first play or two of the game. He went
good,
ball,
excellent memory, 75 yard touchdown pass. And that was the only touchdown of the day for Ole Miss. They lost 62-7. AJ Brown had four catches, and DK Metcalf in the game had two. God.
Their quarterback wasn't very good.
No, not that year. You're right. He was not very good at all.
That was hard to watch. That was the other thing. It was hard to watch that film because that quarterback was horrendous.
Yeah.
Anyways.
One last thing on Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't know on the Eagles, man.
Here's my last thing on Philadelphia, if I didn't say it yesterday. I think they're done. Like, nothing will surprise, obviously, in the NFL, especially in this division this year. But there is no chance, in my opinion, that they can beat Green Bay or New Orleans. Now, I don't know if Taysom Hill is the quarterback. You know, the Saints here for a couple of games have gotten a bit lucky, right? They played the Falcons with Taysom Hill as the starter, and they played the Broncos, who are a very good defensive team. And actually, New Orleans was struggling to move the football. It was the lack of Denver offense with the, you know, with no quarterbacks and the turnovers.
That was a bad deal.
I mean, Taysom Hill was 9 of 16 for like 70 yards or something like that in that game.
The other dude was 1 of 9.
Yeah, the other dude was 1 of 9. He had more interceptions than completions. But I guess, you know, if Drew Brees isn't back for that game, I guess the Eagles could beat the Saints. They can't. There's no chance they beat the Packers this week, I don't think. So the point is that, I mean, like the guy this morning was saying, look, if they can steal one of the next three, you know, it's the way we talk as NFC East teams this year, right? And looking at the brutal schedule of playing, by the way, the NFC, of playing the NFC West and the AFC North. I mean, that's what we've had this year as the NFC. We've had the two toughest divisions in football as part of each team's schedule, which, by the way, is part and parcel to the terrible records. I mean, terrible teams or bad teams, yes, but part of the reason that the records in the NFC East are so bad, and I don't know that this has really been pointed out, but it's true that the NFC East got in their rotation, in their schedule rotation, the NFC West and the AFC North, the two best divisions in football. In fact, really the two best divisions in football, and it's not even close. So Philadelphia, you know, back to the, they got to steal one. They got to steal Green Bay, New Orleans, or Arizona to get to 4-9-1 heading into their final two games. And then they would have to beat Dallas and Washington, because I do think 6-9-1 would probably do it. But I don't think they'll get to 6. That's 3 more wins for them. They're not good enough to win 3 more games. Could be my famous last NFC East words for the year.
and they should release Alex Smith right this second.
Yeah.
Man, the public is all over Green Bay -9 this week. All over them.
Are they? Have you already looked at that? I haven't looked at that, actually.
I'm looking at covers.com right now.
Oh, covers.
I mean, Green Bay's a 9-point favorite. 9-point favorite over Philly.
Actually, I don't even,
brutal.
You know, Philly got the backdoor cover against Seattle on Monday night. One more thing real quickly before we get to Cooley's film breakdown. And that is that today at 3:40 this afternoon, Wednesday at 3:40, I kept saying Tuesday earlier this morning on the radio show.
You had a headache.
I was compromised this morning, but I didn't say anything about it on the air. It's the return of RG3. And Cooley, I did. It was actually funny today. For those that didn't listen to the radio show this morning, basically I did a show that featured the two most polarizing quarterbacks of the last decade for the Washington football team. Started with a lot of talk about RG3 and then ended with a lot of talk about Kirk Cousins, because I did it with Galdi here, but I had somebody from Minnesota on the show who said that basically Kirk, with the fan base there, is as polarizing maybe. He said maybe not as much in Washington, but this guy was of the mindset, it's like, look, you can't get caught up in all these narratives. You got to look at the actual, you know, games and what happens. Anyway, I'm not going to spend any time on that. I promise. That's it on Kirk. But today is an opportunity for Robert Griffin III to play a game that matters for the first time since 2016. Okay, he is not. He started as the Browns starter to start the 2016 season. Got hurt in that opener against Philadelphia, actually, and really hasn't played as a starter in a game that's mattered since. And really, if you want to talk about a game with like big time stakes, it's been since 2012. And today he's going to start a game at Heinz Field on a Wednesday afternoon at 3:40. All right, where they're going to be relying on him to play well. They need this game. They're 10-point underdog. They're in a playoff fight right now. Now, Baltimore's schedule, you know, we've looked at schedules here, you know, in the NFC East. I don't know that anybody's got an easier schedule than the Ravens have the rest of the way. After the game with the Steelers, they get the Cowboys, then they get the Browns on a Monday night. They finish with Jacksonville, the Giants, and the Bengals. So they're probably going to figure out a way to get to the postseason. But how do you think Robert Griffin III will play today? I will tell you, you know, he has already tweeted like 5 times today. All right. Already, God is good all the time. Please help out my foundation, make life better for military vets, underprivileged youth, victims of domestic abuse. And, you know, it's the RG3 Foundation tweet, which is great. And yesterday, faith makes things possible, not easy. If it was easy, everyone would do it. So it's his, you know, he's into every day putting out some sort of inspirational tweet. That aside, this is the first real game. He started the finale last year when they were already, when they sat all their starters against the Steelers because they were 14-1, 13-2. How do you think he'll play today?
Not well.
Why?
I don't think he's a good quarterback. That's why, simply, he's playing the best defense in football.
Yeah.
It's a bad matchup for Baltimore as it is anyway, because the Steelers' run defense is outstanding. They're not going to put him in a lot of really advantageous situations, or I would bet, because of second and nine, second and eight, third and six plus. I don't think he sees the field incredibly well. I think Pittsburgh's had a ton of time to prepare this game plan. I mean, obviously they understand, or you didn't understand exactly who you were going to get at quarterback, but it's a rested Pittsburgh defense. I think it's like a 12 of 29, 12 of 28 for 150 yards, two picks.
I mean, they're compromised too, obviously, with all the COVID-19.
That's a bold prediction as it stands, but I don't. Honestly, I will tell you this. I know everyone thinks that I dislike Robert. He's so intriguing. I don't dislike Robert. I just don't believe in him as a really good starting quarterback. I would love to see him light it up. It would be a great story. I would. If he lights it up, it will be so much fun to watch that game tonight.
You know, the last time...
I have no agenda, is what I'm saying.
I know you don't. The last time they played the Steelers, that game was all about turnovers. Baltimore had 265 yards rushing in the game against the Steelers. Dobbins had 113. He's not going to play today. Gus Edwards is. No Mark Ingram today, but there was no Mark Ingram in the last game either. Jackson had 65 yards on the ground, but Jackson had two picks and two fumbles, and that was the game. They lost 28-24. They did run the football. It'll be interesting to see Griffin take over Jackson's role as a dual threat quarterback, and see if he can hold up and see if he can perform from a rush standpoint at the same level. You know, to be honest with you, Cooley, I just had this thought. Griffin may throw the football better than Jackson in terms of a pure thrower of the football. I mean, maybe there are some similarities there. I never thought Griffin was a poor passer when you would, suck the linebackers in off of a read option, pull and drop back, the drift route that they ran 89% of the time. I always thought he was accurate on a lot of those throws.
He was. He let it go.
He let it go.
I went back. We did this. I think I did this with you. I did a film breakdown of part of the 2012 season of Robert, and he didn't see too much, man. He would let the ball go. Now there's some interesting storylines to this. I mean, in general, the Ravens, like, who are they playing? Pull up the Ravens on our list. I don't know if they have a tight end active this week.
Well, I mean, they have. They've got 16 now. I think it's now 16 players. It was 20. I think it's 16 now. As of this morning, the latest was that Dobbins and Ingram are not going to play. There was discussion overnight that they would play, that they were going to be pulled off the COVID-19 list. So they've got Gus Edwards and Justice Hill, who's played a little bit.
Is Andrews playing?
I'm sorry?
Is Mark Andrews playing?
I forget. Is Andrews healthy anyway? He may have been... Hold on.
Well, it was the other dude who I think is really good that broke his leg.
Let me just see if they've got on our lads.
No, Mark Andrews test positive November 29th as the Ravens COVID list shows.
Yeah, he's on the COVID-19 list.
They don't have it. So now you're talking about a team that can really run the ball. I've really credited that organization because of the way they've built it to run the ball. They had 2 years ago, they had three great tight ends. Or a year ago, they had three great tight ends. Hayden Hurst went in free agency. The other dude, who I love and can never think of his name, broke his leg in that gruesome leg injury, and now Andrews is not playing. They don't have a tight end active tonight.
You know what I'm looking at? I'm looking at our – are you looking at our lads right now?
I'm not. I'm looking at an inactive list right now.
Oh, because the our lads updated, today or last night, I'm sorry, does not have
like 12 players.
They don't have a tight end listed.
They
do. Yeah, it's Dez Bryant may start today for them. It's a long shot.
They might line him up and play him at tight end. He's big enough.
They're 10.5-point underdogs. But, well, you know what? What it does, it creates even more the opportunity. If Griffin can somehow play great and lose by a field goal at the gun, 31-28, but he was outstanding, or pull off the upset, it may be the day that he creates a third part to his professional football career. One last opportunity somewhere next year as a starter.
This would be amazing. You realize that Baltimore right now has D linemen practicing on the offensive line.
It's
because
a mess.
They're probably not going to have 53 guys active. I bet you they have a linebacker that's going to play tight end this week. Chris Board's probably going to play tight end for them.
Pittsburgh's missing some players too.
Gakwe's actually lining up at tight end this week. They really should. I mean, it'll be interesting. I don't know if they should play this game.
James Conner, Stephon Tuitt, and somebody else, they're without on the COVID-19 list. I'm wondering if Anthony McFarlane, who, you know, was that back out of Maryland, if he's going to get more of an opportunity. They like to play Snell. Actually, I think Snell would be a great full-time back somewhere else. Defensively, though, they're healthy, it would appear, and that's a problem for Baltimore. Anyway, all right, let's get to Cooley's belated film breakdown of the Thanksgiving Day game right after this word from one of our sponsors.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We're going in-depth, play-by-play. The Cooley Film Breakdown. Here's Cooley and Kevin.
Cooley's Film Breakdown today will focus on the offense from the 41-16 win over the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. We'll do some defense tomorrow, and then we'll get prepared for the NFL weekend on Friday, and then preview Washington-Pittsburgh on Monday, more likely than not. That's the schedule as of now, always subject to change. I was going back through the film breakdown list that I have from every game, because I'm keeping a list of every single grade for every single player. And we had missed a game earlier this year, if you recall, because
on defense,
because it was the day that Haskins got benched And so we decided to focus on that as the primary part of the show and pass on the defensive film breakdown. Last week we missed Cincinnati, but you know what? It was probably the game to miss. There wasn't a whole hell of a lot to it. But the win over Dallas was one of the more enjoyable wins, you know, over the last few years if you're a Washington fan like I am and like you are. And so let's go. Let's do the offense and start with the quarterback, Alex Smith.
Well, let's start with the offense real quick. I thought that they did a really good job mixing up some of the pre-snap stuff, some of the motions that they used, some of the shifts. Like at one point, they shifted three or four guys from tight into empty. They ended up getting a matchup with Terry McLaurin on an inside linebacker. They were trying to run verts, but they still get Terry with a matchup on Van Der Esch. Like, that's smart stuff right there. I thought Turner did a pretty good job with that. The touchdown run in the fourth quarter, it's not the last touchdown run. It's the one before that.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to walk through this play.
Okay.
Because I haven't necessarily seen this exact look, and I love it. I wrote down, like, this is my favorite play design of the year from Washington. So it's a first and 10 at the 23-yard line. It ends up being a gun run. And I mean, anybody that's watching, you understand that they're a predominant gun team. So they're really running like a weak side zone play. So you're running a tight zone at the open tackle to the left. But they hop the back, Gibson, behind the quarterback in gun, but slightly to its right. It's almost like a modified pistol. And it's funny, as I'm sitting here watching this, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, people really don't move their back enough in gun situations. Like, the back's always setting by the quarterback, and you could put the back anywhere in the hell you wanted him back there in the backfield. It's interesting. I'll bet more teams start doing this more. The reason you like moving your back and adjusting your back where you don't know exactly where he's going to be is because it creates a conflict with the numbers count for a defense. Is it a three-man side on the right? Is it a four-man side on the left? What exactly is the number count when the back is in that gray area? And so they hop the back, and he kind of just gets right behind Alex on the right. It's cool. So then he starts this downhill track to the right side. The run's really a zone run to the left. He starts this downhill track to the right side, and it holds the inside backer enough that the double team between Rouye and Schweitzer is able to get right up to Jalen Smith on that double team. On the open tackle side, it's Morgan Moses. They actually pass set him, and he entices the passer upfield. So instead of blocking zone it's like a delay. It's not draw. But it's more delayed because the back's coming from that gun set. So he doesn't have to aggressively attack. The back has time to push that downhill and then make a cut inside of him. You're just having that left tackle basically keep a strong inside hand. That's the hardest block on front side zone, is to really push that defensive end so you can stretch him and make a cut. So instead of really trying to push the defensive end, you just entice him upfield. They go three receivers to the other side, but when they go three receivers to the other side and they hop the back, now Dallas rotates their strong safety. They rotate coverage to the three receiver side, which is the side away from where you want to run the ball. The free safety then rotates to the middle. So you get this really great number count on defense by bringing the back, which makes it essentially, as he gets to just to the right of Alex, it's a four-man side with the back. A one-man side away from it. And so they get rotation away from it. They get an upfield rush by the end, who's really just taking himself out of the play. You don't even have to do very much. And a downhill track by the back that makes Jalen Smith come up and fill. So it's an easy, natural. It's not really a cutback. It's a front-side zone play. It was great, man. It was awesome.
You know, it's an awesome play. And even if the DN doesn't get sucked in by Moses, you know, in pass block mode, well, then, you know, if he's got the vision, he can bounce it to the outside, and it's a big play because nobody's there.
Exactly. And they know, I'm sure they've seen this 4x1 look, and they know that they're going to get rotation. And so they know nobody's going to be there because they know that free safety is going to rotate to the middle of the field away from the back. You shouldn't have anybody down to that side. It's a really, I liked it. You know, I liked the little Ruski play that they got into. And obviously, we'll talk about that play. The reverse pass with Logan Thomas and Wildcat looks. They had shifts. They had some good motions. I thought that it was really the most unpredictable type of game. No, I mean, the only thing that I would say now moving forward, especially, I don't know. I enjoyed watching this on film yesterday and today. I would say that when they go under center or pistol, it's all gap scheme stuff. So they will have to mix that up this week and go with some more zone run stuff. Because if I'm playing you, if I'm playing Scott Turner right now, I'm saying, hey, D, he goes into pistol or he goes in under center, we're going to play gap scheme run stuff. And essentially, until they break that tendency next week, you would guess that. They don't have as much good run action stuff as well because they're not going with that stretch zone out of it. And then my last complaint before you make any go ahead.
No, go. I thought you were going to start with Alex Smith. Go ahead.
I'm about to. But my last complaint is they are the worst running back screen team in football right now. I don't think they can get a running back screen right now unless it's one of those guys split out and it's the alley screen type of deal. Like, you can't just go with your first screen call with a run action fake on first and 20 when you're backed up. Like, everybody, unless you're Washington, who got beat with that, and you're playing Del Rio, who's going to blitz you on first and 20, you can't just call screen on first and 20. That's a bad place to call screen. Like, this is not a good running back screen team. I mean, they do. If you were to say your best weapons, two of your four best weapons for sure are McKissick and Gibson, design some screens, man. Not a good screen dude. Not a good screen guy.
So I wanted to mention before the play that you broke down, the Gibson touchdown run, you know, that play came right after the failed fake punt. And what's interesting is I went back after reading somewhere that McCarthy said after the game about the fake punt, we didn't execute. The reason they didn't execute is because the play was intended to be a pass down the field by Cedric Wilson, the guy that took the reverse on the fake punt. And maybe he didn't know it, but they are blocking as if it's a pass play. And there is a receiver wide open at the 45-yard line. And I don't know why. I could be wrong about this, but the fact that the entire blocking front doesn't go downfield would indicate to me that this was a pass call off the fake punt.
They practiced it.
They practiced it, but this dude did not.
Maybe he just shit the bed.
I mean, he didn't execute. I mean, what? We never even saw one of those, like, fake, like, you know, him getting ready to throw the football. And he's got somebody wide open down the field who, it's going to be an easy first down if he makes a decent throw, and that's a long throw. But you know, I don't know what Cedric Wilson's background is. He never threw it. He never threw the football. And if he had thrown the football, it probably would have been every bit of a 25 to 35-yard play. And the only person back to stop it would have been the returner. Would have been Sims Jr. I'm not sure why he didn't throw the football. Anyway.
I don't understand it. I mean, he never even – maybe it's just because it took so long. I don't know, man. He never even thinks about it.
But am I correct that this is what the play was intended to do? The guy, the receiver's looking for the ball.
I'm gonna have to pull it up on. So the receiver, both the receivers as they go downfield aren't really looking for the ball immediately.
No, they are. The one receiver is immediately. He's got his left arm up in the air. He's looking for it.
I'm watching the wrong cut here.
Yeah, he was looking for the ball.
No, I'm watching the right play. I mean, I just don't. Yeah, no, I mean, you can see him wide open.
He's wide open, and he turns around looking for the ball. And look at the entire offensive front. They're pass blocking. Anyway.
Oh, I know.
That was interesting. All right, let's get started with Alex Smith.
Second play of the game, run action pass, Burt's play. Sims is wide open in the middle of the field versus cover two. He throws the check down for a negative yard. I think he looks at him. I don't know why he turns it down. He is splitting the safeties. It is a huge play opportunity. Just took the check down for negative two. I actually went to the sacks next, so I'll just go through them. The first is a third down sack. It's not really his fault. He's got edge pressure off his right. He steps up. Schweitzer gets beat inside. Really, that's a tough one. The second sack out of the three, he probably could have thrown the flat really quick to Gibson, but I don't. I mean, it's pretty tight right there. The third sack is somehow unblocked with the protection that they have. I think it's 72. I decided I didn't know his name, and I would just call him 72 because I don't really
sharp.
Care. So it's 72. Just he doesn't make an adjustment, or Alex got to slide his line. It was actually that third sack was on a third and one down there in the red zone.
Right.
It was a six man front of six.
And it wasn't line. Offsides, right?
No, he was just a great, great get off. Yeah. I didn't think it was offsides. And there's literally nothing Alex could do with the third sack. So that was not a huge problem when I looked at it. The second drive of the game, I thought he missed Isaiah Wright twice in a row. Like, he threw into double coverage to Terry McLaurin. And Wright he just guesses. Terry's breaking deep on an out route, and Wright bends to the middle of the field, and everyone goes with Terry.
That's the pass after the Logan Thomas pass. And I mentioned
the pass right after the Logan Thomas
pass. Yeah, I mentioned to you, I thought he was throwing into double coverage.
Well, he really is. I mean, they were playing a version of two of cover two, so they had one safety covering half the field on that side. And almost everyone goes with Terry.
Yeah.
And safety goes with Terry and Wright's down the middle. On the other side, they were playing a version of quarters. You call it quarter, half. There's no way that other quarter safety on the other side can get to Wright. That's a walk-in touchdown. Later, one or two plays later on that drive, he throws to Cam Sims, and it's a pass interference call that was not pass interference on Cam Sims. Well, it was called against Dallas, but
right. No, I know the play. Yeah,
Terry McLaurin's running across the field, trying to kind of clear that thing out, and then on the far sideline, Isaiah Wright's running a wheel route. The safety stays over the top, right over the top of Sims. McLaurin right away is wide open on the crossing route. Would have been an easy throw to McLaurin.
Right.
As Alex reads that out, he probably reads it wrong. But then he's progressing to Sims or Wright, and he's looking at those two. Wright is running a wheel route. His dude falls down. He's walking into the end zone. Walking into the end zone. And Alex is looking at it. And he just lets it go to Sims. You're like, not exactly sure why you're doing that. But, okay. sounds good.
Yeah, I'm seeing this. You're right.
I mean, my God, did he... He missed the wheel route to throw it right into double coverage. I mean, that was a near disaster.
Yeah. As was the one to McLaurin, you know, after the Logan Thomas play.
No, there's no doubt about it. He had a fumbled snap down there. I don't know if it looked like Ruye kind of double clutched it. Maybe Cadence thing or not. I wouldn't put that on Alex unless he did something with the Cadence. Good recovery, though. Alex got that, right?
Yeah. Alex fell on it.
That would have been a disaster.
Yeah.
I
mean, I was concerned for him jumping into the into the fray to recover the fumble. I mean, those are the kinds of plays where it's like, oh God, just get up. Hopefully, he'll be all right.
I don't know. There's a few more things. The interception was dreadful. You know, the interception was absolute dog crap. That's bad luck as well, because I think he just thinks he's throwing that ball away, and he throws it literally right to Jalen Smith.
Right.
But the thing is he doesn't have that much pressure in his face on that pick, and he's got Terry McLaurin wide open over the
early.
Fence. Early, right now. And so if you go back and watch that interception play, I think Leighton Vander Esch is kind of lurking around in the middle of the field. When you look at it again, and I'm sure Alex will think this too, is Vander Esch really hugging the line of scrimmage too much? I think he probably saw Vander Esch, which is why he turned Terry down right when he looked at him. because he didn't want Van Der Esch to pick that off.
Right.
I think a little touch and he gets it over Van Der Esch, or he can get it around Van Der Esch in that situation. So, you know, that one was bad. A bad ball to Terry McLaurin on the old button hook, backed up, but they had a completion for 9 yards in that play. So, you know, good with that. Fourth and one late in the game. If that was a zone read play, he definitely should have pulled that. There's no way they're putting Alex, old broken leg Alex, on a zone read. But if he pulls that, there's nobody there.
So it's really funny because there was one of the touchdown runs from shotgun. D. Hall called it as a zone read. And I said it was on Monday's show.
I said
there's no possible way that they've got Alex Smith into a zone read situation where he's reading the D end and he can keep it. I just can't imagine that that's the case. I think that these are all zone run scheme things at a shotgun or at a pistol, shotgun mostly. And you know, there's no chance. I mean, he can defensively. Why would you even consider him right now as a potential runner in that situation? I don't think that you should. And you know what? If they burn you once, fine. But I would not. There's no way I would pay attention to the quarterback and think that he's gonna pull it and keep it.
No, there's no way. But I mentioned to you a week ago that they could do this. He could pull it and keep it and have a boot.
Yeah.
I said maybe it was 2 weeks ago. And that's really what they could have done is you got another guy out there they could dump it to. The fly sweep motion guy goes in front of that, and then Alex could pull and keep it. And really, he can run boot with that where that guy's out in the flat. You'd save it. It's a RPO, man.
I'm not talking about your RPO. I'm talking about the pure zone read quarterback keeps based off DN crashing. I would save it for the biggest fourth and one of the year. You know, later in the year.
That was a big one.
Yeah, but they're already up in that game. They're up a bunch in that game at that point, I think. That's right before
they were up like 27. Yeah, you're right.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Then just punt it. Then this is not a negative. I'm not saying it was negative on Alex. I just wanted to talk about it. The other thing is, nobody goes with Alex Smith on the Ruski play. Nobody. Go watch that play again. Everyone goes with McKissick. The point I would say on that play. You really almost, the true Ruski is to take everybody and run right.
Right.
And then let McKissick sit there for just another second longer, and then he's got to go alone.
Right.
That's the true Ruski. But it worked. Okay, the positives with Alex Smith. One, you watch it on TV, and you can watch it on film and see the same thing. He has total command of the offense. There are multiple times that you can see him pointing and moving and redirecting guys to the right spots, to the right places. His cadence is awesome. His snap count is terrific. His tempo and control of the offense, I think, is really evident when you watch Alex Smith operate. That they're getting a lot out of him for. Two, amazingly, his pocket movement and his ability to move out of the pocket is still pretty darn good.
Right.
But I thought more throughout this game, he's getting more comfortable hanging in the pocket a little bit longer. The best example of this, before we get to some of the other like obviouses, if that's a word. It's a 2nd and 16 at the 28-yard line. It was after they had taken I think a sack on first down, or they had a 9-yard loss on first down, whatever it was. 2nd and 16, and Inman's running. He hits Inman on a spot route. It was probably Inman's only catch.
The one where the one where he maybe got the first down, but didn't try hard enough to get the first down.
Yeah, and it ends up being a third. It was all right. It wasn't the worst.
Okay.
But Alex Inman really should have come further over into the middle of the field on a spot route to clear. He then realizes it and kind of you know, shuffles over to give Alex a window, but Alex hangs in the pocket to get that thing there. And I think this is really one of the first weeks that you've seen Alex hitch twice to stay with a route. Normally, if he's got to hitch more than once, he'll just turn. He'll move on. But he stayed in the pocket, and he hung in there tough. And he it's a big-time throw. That's a huge conversion right there
right.
to get it to third and one, which they got.
Right.
Actually, they did, I think. I thought he was accurate with his underneath throws for the most part. You know,
actually, they did not get that first down. They ended up taking a field goal.
That was the one they got sacked on the next play.
Yeah.
That was the one they get sacked on the next play. But so Alex, I thought, was accurate throughout. He's good on timing with 2 to 3 level throws to getting it to the underneath route. If he's got to get it to the underneath route, he got some good throws on slant routes to Terry McLaurin. Huge play I thought in the game was hitting McKissick on a little snag route
on the 3rd and 12.
On the 3rd down, that's where they overcame the 2nd and 19. That's where I got that mixed up. It's a 3rd and 9,
right?
In that situation, but to overcome that, they had a really good run.
Yeah,
they had a really good run with Gibson to get them to 3rd and 9, and then to overcome that, the timing's perfect. I mean, McKissick more so. It's a great play, but you know the timing by Alex is perfect. So he's going to allow him to catch and run with that thing as opposed to have to sit and wait.
Yeah.
Great ball on the one touchdown pass, drive it on Logan Thomas in the end zone, low and down where only Logan Thomas can get it. That's a good ball. I thought he had a really nice ball to Terry McLaurin on a run action crosser. It was the one where he hits Terry in the middle of the field. That said, though, he should have taken the shot over the top to Sims. Sims was on the outside running a go. The safety squatting on Terry. He got a shot to take to Sims there, but still good ball, good completion. And then, a couple times, just escaping the pocket. He gets out of the pocket right once, and I think he ends up having a throwaway down in the red zone. He gets out of the pocket to the left. It was a play where McKissick and Logan Thomas tripped feet. They both fell down. Now, I'm sure you're like, both my receivers fell down where I want to go with the ball. So, I mean, overall, Kev, he was just a guy as far as pure performance. You know, you gotta factor in his operating ability of this offense and what he means, I think, to a lot of these guys on this offense. But as a quarterback, I thought he missed 3 or 4 throws where he had opportunities to get the ball down the field. I thought he made a couple bad decisions. The interception wasn't good. I mean, he's a C-. He doesn't have to be better than you could say C-plus for operating, but I mean, if you're evaluating, it's just a guy. I mean, they win, he operates. Let's call it a dead C. Right. Let's just go C.
Okay.
I'll do that. As I sit here and rethink that, I didn't give him any upgrades for operating the offense at a great tempo and rhythm. So I'm going to give him a dead C. But I don't think he's got to, right now, the way they're playing, I don't think he's got to be that much better than that for them to have a chance to win some of these games.
All right. Let's get to the skill position players and start with Terry McLaurin.
Let's go. Terry McLaurin. Okay. The dude can't get covered on a slant. They can't cover. He's a slant freaking machine. He had 2 of them in this game. It was awesome. I just talked about a big throw to Terry on a run action where he's running the crosser. It's just he doesn't have to have some special move or some special thing. Like, he does such a great job pressing vertical up the field with speed to stem that release and then just a quick breakaway, and you're like, He's really good. Like, you watch that play and you're like, he's really, really good. He gets it. I mean, special guy. And then you watch, the reverse pass. For him to go up and attack that with his hand, that's a huge catch by Terry in that situation.
Right.
You know, and he drew a PI, or I think they're in, somewhere in the 2nd quarter. Which was big. Alex Smith got pressured. He ends up drawing a PI. Terry's an A. I just think the more I watch him, the better he gets. And it's not because I'm starting to. He's getting better.
Right.
You know, as we've talked about him being a true one receiver in this league, he gets better every week.
What about running the double move stuff that you didn't really love early in the year?
Well, they really did a good job stopping the double move stuff with Terry. They didn't call it. I mean, I didn't see any double moves in this game. Here was a note that I had. You know, early in this game, they're running a run action, play action, pass, whatever you want to call it. Just call it play action, like everyone else in the world. And he's got the single side where he's going right up the hash, and then there's a wheel behind it with Logan Thomas. And I've always understood that play to be a read play by Terry or the X receiver. So that means at 18 yards, if he thinks he can get over the top or split the safeties, then he can go vertical. If he can't, then he's going to sit it down. The quarterback and that receiver have to be on the same page. He sits it down. Now, maybe they're calling it a deep sit. If they are, they should call it a read, because on that one, the one I'm talking about earlier in this game, Alex throws a check down. Terry, if he goes down the middle of the field, no one's covering him. It's a too high look. He's got a wide open middle field. I got to believe that they're just calling it a deep sit. But those are situations, Kev, where if you say, hey, look, we really got to stretch the field, and Terry McLaurin's the guy we'd like to stretch it with, my God, if you get a two-split safety look to that situation, you can't cover him down the middle of the field.
Right.
So give him that option, maybe. But Terry was really good. Since your receivers, the rest of them will be really quick. Steven Sims Jr. played 13 plays. He had one catch, I think, on a speed out. He was a C-plus in this game. Logan Thomas. Dude, shitty on the reverse pass. I mean, that ball hung forever. It did, though.
It's okay. Yeah, well,
that ball.
It's why he's played. That's awesome. It's why he was a college quarterback playing tight end in the pros.
No, that was excellent, man. I love the versatility that he has in that respect, and the zone read as well. Like, the zone read was almost disastrous. Like, I watch that again. It looks like he's so indecisive, and he ends up making the right decision. Be like, is he going to give it? Is he? I don't even know if he knew.
Was he
last second? He's like, I'll just pull it.
I mean, that's essentially what he ran a lot of in college. It's not like he's not used to that.
Yeah, I mean, he did, if he knew exactly what he's doing, you'd say he just did an awesome job of really riding the back. It was actually a tough look, too. They kind of gave a tough look.
I'm looking at the play right now. I think that is a tough decision on the D end. I mean,
the D end,
I mean, with Logan Thomas back there taking the direct snap, you know, with a back next to him, you're going to think as the DN, there's a good chance he's going to keep it on this. And it was played pretty well. Are you saying that he should have just handed it to Barber or Gibson?
No. I think he made the right decision. I'm slightly joking with him as a quarterback or wildcat or reverse. I think he makes the right decision. It looks like the longest ride of a back I've seen in a while.
Right.
Whatever. He got it done, man. Good pass throw a couple of times he's in there. A really good job on toss twice, pinning the edge. He's in a two-point stance, and he's got to kind of crack the defensive end to get the toss. Really good job with that. The touchdown was outstanding by Logan. He's getting walled down the field, and he's not great at getting hands off, which he doesn't do on this job, but right at the top of the stem, it's like, just get the fuck off me. And really good job separating at the end. The other dude throws his hands up like, OPI. Like, dude, you were just groping him for 7 yards down the field. There's no PI.
Right.
The PI's on that dude. I had a couple other catches in this game. The negatives had a false start in the red zone. He still doesn't create a lot of movement at the line of scrimmage. They had an outside zone that got thrown all the way to the sideline. Just because his body turned too much. He's got to be more square and stout with his inside hand and try to get some push. And Morgan Moses did not really help him at all on Alden Smith. And Alden Smith, damn good, man.
Right.
That dude can play. Logan Thomas was a B-plus in this game. Isaiah Wright. Did Wright end up with a catch in this game?
Did he end up with a catch in the game? He did not.
he should have ended up with two touchdowns in this game.
If Alex looked his way.
Well, it would have been one because they were both on the same drive. I did write this note, though. On that wheel route, he makes the guy fall down. He's wide open up the seam. This is like four plays after the other opportunity for a touchdown. I loved it. No frustration. Doesn't throw his arms up. Doesn't act like a baby. Just finishes his route to the end zone and comes back to the huddle. You watch, it's not as often in the NFL, but you watch college football. And I was watching this weekend. There were seven or eight times where you see receivers open. And they're, you're like, dude, we'll see you open on film. Everyone's going to know that you were open. You do not have to tell everyone on national TV that your quarterback botched the entire situation.
Right.
Like, the coaching staff is going to say, good route. Everybody's going to tell you, good job. Alex is going to say, sorry, bro, I definitely should have hit you on that thing. I thought there's some maturity to that, and I appreciate that, especially as a guy that, you know, didn't want to create a scene for the quarterback. So I like that in Isaiah Wright.
Don't you think that's something, too, as a coach, that you would go to him, you know, the next day and say, you know, this is who you are, and that's awesome, but I just want you to know how much I appreciate it, because I've coached players in the past that would have, you know, thrown a fit, and it's hurtful to the team, for starters.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, it shows up on film, and then the other team thinks, oh, they saw that he was wide open, and they're going to come back to that. It's just they're almost going to be looking for that a little bit more. So I mean, that's something that really, I think it's a subtle thing, but I think pointing it out, especially to a young player. And I think these are the guys that Rivera's looking for too, Cooley. I think he's looking for, you know, mature players. He's got a bunch of them when you think about it. I mean, who knows? I mean, we may wake up tomorrow morning and there may be, you know, a couple of bad reports out there. But, I mean, McLaurin and John Allen, and it just seems like there's a lot more maturity on the team. It's almost been an emphasis here recently.
Even with the young players, you are exactly right. And that's a big deal for me. If I'm coaching Isaiah Wright and he starts throwing his hands up, I'm like, bro, you were a scout team guy like 60 days ago.
Right.
Shut up.
Yeah.
You know, I we're all going to see it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's a big deal. I don't know. I wanted to point it out because I went back and watched it like 3 or 4 times just to see, like, is there any gesture at the end of that where he goes, you know, frustration gesture. I actually did do that 1 or 2 times. I was watching something the other day. We were playing Tampa Bay, I think at the end of the 2010 season. We weren't very good in 2010. It was Donovan still.
Yeah.
And I did an excellent job running a choice route, and I break out, and he bounce passes it to me. It lands like 5 feet in front of me. And I just turned around and stared at him for about 3 seconds before I even moved.
Oh, really?
Like, are you freaking serious, man? I just did all that. You did what you did.
Did he say anything?
I'm sure. I don't remember what God said. I'm sure I didn't throw a fit, but it was something that was when Sean had taken over McVay, and it was something that we've joked about a couple times. So I went to pull it up to see what a baby I was. It wasn't as bad as it looked, but knowing myself and knowing how I felt in that moment, I'm like, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have stared him down.
It was a 2010 game against Tampa. Do you remember what quarter it is? Because I could go back and find it right now.
It's late. It's like in the fourth quarter, I think. It's late. It ends up we're going in. It's like a 3rd and 4 on the 20-ish.
Uh-huh. Was that the game where
dude, you don't have to go pull it up. I took a video of it. I can just send it to you.
Was that the year where Santana scored the game, what should have been the game tying touchdown, and we missed the extra point? Oh, guess what I just found.
I think that was it.
Oh, but there's no coaches. Only the there's no coaches tape on that one. Anyway, all right, go ahead.
I'll pull it up.
Okay.
Well, anyway, on to Ives. With the Ives there, he's a C in this game. But I just part of it is that they're not really throwing the ball to some of these guys. Like Cam Sims, C- in this game. He had one shot, you know? And I thought there were a couple other opportunities where I thought there were shots to be taken, but it's hard as a receiver to be an impact player, be more than a C, if you don't get a ball.
Right.
The other two, Sprinkle was not good in this game. He actually played a little bit more, 20 plays. It wasn't good. He was a D. And Tamarik Hemingway was 9 plays in a holding.
Sprinkle played 20 plays in this game. That may be the most for him this year.
Yeah, they went with they sprinkled him in a little bit more.
They sprinkled him in a lot more. And the thing about it, and I'd have to go back and look at this, I'm not sure that you've graded Sprinkle much this year, but he may right now be forced to take this class again. Because he's not doing very well. The teacher may be saying, you may want to come back over the summer and take this one again, see if you can get a better grade, because I don't think you've given Sprinkle better than a D the entire year.
Or it just might be that that this particular student is a senior, and you would like him to just be able to finish the year and go wherever he's going to go.
Good point. Kevin, he's got to be a little bit more focused. I mean, we understand big, senior year, everybody wants to have fun. You've already made your decision on college. You've already gotten in, but you got to finish it out strong. You got to finish it out, professionally, please. Okay. Enough of that.
Antonio Gibson.
Antonio Gibson.
I'm going to start with this just for fun. I think we didn't do this Cincinnati game, but 2 weeks ago, one of my key points that I hadn't really said with Gibson, I hadn't heard anywhere, was his run fakes are god-awful.
Right.
They were so much better.
Really?
Weird, huh?
Yeah. Interesting the way that works.
Those coaches are really,
they're sharp.
Really on it.
They're very perceptive.
They're sharp. They're watching the same stuff. His run fakes were actually much better in this ballgame. Much better. Like, a different dude.
Right.
Just saying. I think he's getting better as a runner. I think he's getting more patience. He'll take it all the way to the front side. Like, even early in the game, I think it was the first play of the game, he takes an outside zone and he gets all the way to the edge, and it's a 4-yard gain. But, dude, a 4-yard gain taking it all the way to the edge early in a ball game is huge. I can't. If you're going to be a zone scheme team, you've got to be able to stretch it to the edge. For him to take it 4 to the edge, I mean, those linebackers in their mind go, we got to run. Like, I know we have gaps, but our gaps are going to be displaced. We got to run. And then all of a sudden, you get cutback. I mean, you get it to the edge a few times, then those cutbacks become available. And it's exactly what happened to this ballgame. I thought, as a runner, much better job even keeping patience to the front side, pushing it, holding, and then making a cut. It wasn't like 3 steps, cut and go. It was hold, pause, see if I can continue to hit front side, and then make the cut. And to me, that was awesome. He string cuts together and really made guys miss. His speed is excellent. He still surprises people with speed. I mean, that first touchdown run that he bounces all the way outside,
yeah,
a great block by 72, our guy.
Sharp.
And who?
David,
72.
David Sharp.
72. Yeah, 72. If Gibson gets outside, the safety should have had an angle to run him down and not let him get to the end zone. But he is faster than you think, man. He can turn it up.
Yeah.
He just, like, boom, third gear, fourth gear, here we go. I thought that was awesome. Big play on a 3rd and 1 on a poor blocked run play, getting a first down. That was, I think they went with Barber a lot, but he had one in a short yardage where you'd say, yeah, I got no problem with Gibson. Does a good job on a poorly blocked play. He hits the hole hard, man. If it's a gap scheme or zone scheme, like he's downhill and he'll hit the hole hard.
Right.
Which I'm impressed with. We went through one of the early plays, one of the big runs, the second touchdown run, or the late touchdown run, where you're like, booyah, let's strike up the Cooley's fantasy team band because I'm scoring some points today. That was about the easiest run of all time.
Yeah.
That was well blocked, but there was nobody there, and the safety did a piss poor job even getting close. The couple negatives. I mentioned that Hemingway had that hold.
Yeah.
That's that downhill dive play. I also mentioned he hit the hole hard. You can't just prematurely bounce that play. I get it that Hemingway shouldn't hold, but he doesn't think Gibson's going to be outside of him. So now all of a sudden he's like, I'm blocking you. Now the back's over here. And you've way out-leveraged me because I was trying to block you from getting inside. Now I got to try to block you from going outside. That's on Gibson. That hold I put on Gibson. You want Hemingway to let go, but he's a young player. If
right.
you bounce that, you're going to get holding penalties. It's just that play can't bounce that way.
Yeah, you've pointed that out before. Sometimes that's on the back.
Yeah. Obviously you want to teach guys to let go, but sometimes they don't always let go. Better in pass protection, not cutting. The one real pass protection I saw him in there, he just gets straight trucked by Jalen Smith. It's on a slant to Terry McLaurin, but he gets in there, turns his head a little bit, but at least he gets in the way.
Yeah.
Jalen Smith just ran him straight over. It's like, dude, deliver a blow. Pretend you're a ball carrier for 1 second. He had good hands on a couple of the checkdowns. He did have a drop on a third down checkdown in this game. But, I mean, for the most part, some big runs. I think really getting better with patience. You see outstanding speed. Gibson was an A-minus in this game. You know what's weird, too?
What?
Is McKissick last game had, like, all the snaps.
Right. Well, here was my reason.
2 weeks ago in Detroit, and then now this week, Gibson's got all the snaps.
This was my theory on this. Tell me if I'm right. They had 5 third-and-ones in this game. They had a 4th-and-1. They had so many short yardages, and that's why Barber ended up with a ton of snaps that may have been Gibson's third down snaps.
Sure. I've seen it done a lot of different ways with running backs as far as who's in and how they're in and when they're in.
You think Turner's doing a good job, don't you?
I thought he did a pretty nice job in this game. Yeah. I think that he could have probably went with some more quick game stuff if they would have needed it to get Alex into a little bit better rhythm, especially early since Alex missed a couple opportunities early.
Right.
But to keep balance in the run game and to keep Dallas defensively off balance pre-snap and with some of the stuff they're doing with motions, yeah, I thought he did a pretty good job.
All right, let's get to McKissick and Barber.
McKissick, there's certain things you see, like, he ran that 3rd-and-9, that little snag route. Watch him transition out of that. Like, it's so quick. He really sells like he's going in, the whip, in whatever you want to call it, in and out, snag route, whatever.
Yeah.
Reverse China.
Is that what they call it?
If you went out and in, you'd call it a China, but if you went in and out.
Okay.
China. It's a reverse China. But he's such a quick transition guy. He's got such a burst. He's good after the catch. Not as much. Really, he made a really nice cut on the Ruski play to get inside of Morgan Moses there and get that first down. A really good cut on that play. He cannot block at all. He is better at getting in the way as a pass protector. There was one of the run plays where he was on the edge and he had to go out to the safety to a run play that was going to his side. And it was like, ooh, you have no idea where to even start with this, do you?
Yeah.
Like, it was weird. I should have wrote it down. It doesn't matter. But okay, so he lines up right at the edge of the line of scrimmage, offset, just behind the tackle. The safety is about 4 yards, 5 yards into the box, outside of him. The back's going to push to that side, which means the safety should go also outside. He's a back. He should understand how you want to push that safety. He literally runs straight up the field. The safety goes around and outside of him. And it's like, what do you think his reaction was going to be to run his way? Anyway, that's not a huge deal. I thought McKissick was a B in this game. And then Barber, I thought, was good. He actually, Barber, He is really.
What did you give McKissick? A B? What did you give McKissick?
A B.
Okay.
A B.
Barber, what were you going to say? He's got really good vision.
Really has, he's shifty and he's got good vision.
Great vision.
I think he could be. I think he could have more carries in some of these situations.
I agree.
Just, he seems to be the odd man out with Gibson running the ball the way Gibson is. But to me, Barber has better vision than Gibson.
I agree. He had a great.
There were a couple zones, like a couple cuts he made was awesome. Were awesome. The fourth and one is huge. He's got a knack for knowing situational football. I mean, it's like he didn't have very many play a lot in this game, but I thought he was an A. I mean, I thought everything he did was pretty efficient.
Yeah, well, he played. I mean, this was his, I think, best statistical game of the year. He had 11 carries for 57 yards. I don't think he's had a game like that this year, has he? Yeah, there hasn't been a game where he's had 11 carries in a game.
No, I mean, the first game was the last time I think he had this many carries. Remember?
Oh, you're right. 17 carries, 29 yards in the opener. but this was by far and away. I mean, 11 carries, 57 yards, 5.2 yards per carry. And he had a big run at the end of the game when the game was over. I thought the fourth and one run where he was stopped short and he made that second effort twist and he got it was a great run.
I thought it was an excellent run. His yards per carry this year are going to suck, but like every carry he's had third and one.
You know what's interesting is that we've said before when they signed him, I remember we had a conversation, I'm pretty sure we did, and I said, I liked Peyton Barber in Tampa. And then we went and looked to, looked up his years, and he's like a career 3.4 or 3.5 yards per carry guy. And I think it's probably because he's got a lot of short yardage, a lot of third and one, fourth and one, third and two runs where, you know, he's getting first downs, but they're not, you know, big carries against goal line defense.
I mean, we could go back and cut up all of his carries and take a look.
Right.
I'm not that interested, but I don't know. I just think he's got a good knack. I think he's got a good feel. He's not a big dude, but he runs strong.
Agreed.
All right, so those are your skill players.
You gave Barber an A. Yeah, okay. So
Barber was an A.
So let's get to the offensive line. And we'll finish it up for the day, and then you'll do, you know, a quick run through on the defense tomorrow.
Oh, I didn't give your grade. Inman was a C. All your receivers besides Terry are pretty much that C area.
I was gonna I have that written down. I was gonna come back and say you didn't grade Inman. All right. Inman
had 11 plays. Inman was not relevant to this game.
Okay.
Did have that one catch though.
Yeah.
All right. 72.
Sharp.
69
played every snap in the game.
Seriously reason? You know, all the offensive line, for the most part, they played the whole game. It's crazy.
No, they didn't because
there
was a
grade.
But there was a number in there late that I was unfamiliar with, and I went back and looked it up.
Wes Martin played some.
It was Ishmael was in the game. But anyway, minimal snaps. Wes Martin only had 5 snaps. So just give us the starters.
Yeah, I will only give you the starters. That is right. 72. Early in the game, mistarget the linebacker, leave him open. Or actually, he went up to a linebacker and just aborts the D end in front of him. You're like, someone's going to block that dude. You can't just on zone run go to linebacker. Later in the game, he can't get up to the linebacker. 3 or 4 times, you're like, are we sure what the process is between who we're going to double and then what level, what guy we're getting to on the second level? I thought there were some big questions there in that situation. The first sack is an immediate pressure from 72.
Right.
And then Alex steps up and Switzer gives up interior pressure. So really, he created the first step up. The second pressure, or the second sack, he's bowled by Alden Smith. He good.
Yeah, he's good.
But he's bowled by Alden Smith, and it's either a half sack by Alden or whatever they gave it. And Switzer also was a part of that sack as well. And the third sack I thought was a missed assignment by 72. And turning 90 free is a problem. I don't know his name either, so we'll call him.
I think that would be Lawrence, isn't it?
Joking, dude. I just like to call him numbers.
Okay, Doc.
He was not very good in this game. The first touchdown run, awesome job on the edge. Like, the guy kind of falls off inside. Careful holding, I would say. You watch that first touchdown run again,
Yeah. He's
got his hands way outside. I mean, they are wrapped around him, and he falls off, and the dude ends up falling down. Like, that will get called a hold more than 50% of the time.
Right.
It probably was a hold. Didn't call it, so it's not.
Right.
So I'm going to say, great job. Really, I think, is a little bit slow-footed. I think he's uncertain, does not have enough ass on him in some of the past situations where he's a pure setback guy. He can get bowled, he can get pushed, he can get outrun by speed. 72 is a D minus.
Oof.
That's a little bit tough. He was a D.
But don't change it. If he was a D minus, he was a D minus. I mean, which is it, a D or a D minus? You get one chance here.
Well, here's the thing that helps him. He's got one serious badass right next to him that makes life a lot easier. Sheriff was awesome in this game. I mean, quick off the ball, some of the front side zone stuff where he's got a guy that's some of the run plays to the right where he's got a guy that's outside of him to the right. He's squaring up with them so quick. Like, he is on dudes right now. Couple of the run plays where he's double teaming with Rouye, they're ass kicking. Like, I wrote Joe Bugle. Hayaka stud.
Hayaka.
Hayaka. I mean, there's some ass kicking. There's some great movement throughout this game. He's on backers quick. He's great climbing to the second level. He's excellent passing off stunts. I thought he was really, really good in pass protection. I mean, to me, Sheriff was what you expect out of Brandon Sheriff. I just did. I thought his pass block was great. Run block to me was impactful. Pro Football Focus is going to grade Brandon Sheriff a 69.7 this week for his game performance on 65 snaps. I am going to grade Brandon Sheriff an A.
Okay. Is 69.7 a D from them?
No, 69.7 is really probably in the B range.
Okay.
So the way they do it, if anybody wanted to, this is the way I think they do it. Every player starts at a 60.
Okay.
If you were to get no positives, true impact positives, and no true impact negatives, your end result grade on PFF would be 60. That's your generic just a guy grade would be 60. So if you're up to 70, you're in that B range, I think, on PFF, if anybody's ever looking at those grades.
Okay.
If you're above 80s, you're like, they're grading you an A.
Okay, so they were nowhere near your grade.
Well, if I said B, I still think it was A. Here was the two negatives from Sheriff, or the negative from Sheriff. A couple of their gap plays where they're pulling him. He's pulling and he's kicking out. You see the safety coming off the edge. But he's supposed to kick out the defensive end. He's attacking the safety because he sees color. They're actually right now on their gap plays bringing like a fly player or a reverse player. That guy's holding the safety outside. You're expecting he'll hold that safety. You got to get in and kick out of the defensive end. You can't turn him free. Okay. Sheriff just sees color and he bypasses the defensive end twice in this game. It's not just the first guy you see. It's got to be the defensive end, especially the way they're running those plays. If that makes any sense. Plus, the play's supposed to go inside of Sheriff. So if he hits the defensive end from the inside out, and then the safety's further outside, then the safety really shouldn't be able to get through him and the defensive end to make the play anyways. So I'm just saying, make sure you kick out the defensive end, Brandon.
Schweitzer.
Rouye.
Oh, Rouye, okay.
Rouye's, well, we're moving across the board
okay. Here.
I thought it was his best game as far as getting movement in the run game. Some of his double teams were really, really good. His pass protection was extremely consistent throughout this ball game. He had a fumbled snap, which is one of the only real negatives that I had. I thought Rouye was an A-minus in this game. Schweitzer gave up two sacks. Both the sacks are on up-and-under moves or inside moves. He's slow-footed, especially on those up-and-under inside moves. And he's missing with his punch on those things. It's like he's just got to be a little bit more aggressive with his inside hand. And then in the run game at times, when he gets like a stunt penetration or someone attacking, he can catch, which is weird for me to say because at the same time, he has been awesome in the zone run scheme. He is getting, like, I love watching this dude right now. I mean, I'm really loving watching Switzer and some of the zone stuff. He's firing up the ball. He's got great first couple steps. He's getting lateral and vertical with speed. He's attacking. He's getting up to the second level. He's a big part of why this run game is started to improve. I mean, obviously, it's Gibson and what he's been doing, but guys like Switzer operating in some of those zone plays is giving that back the ability to trust. If I really push it, man, then I can set this guy Switzer up who's really doing what I want him to do. I think he's been awesome in terms of improvement with that. I think he'll get better as far as a pass protector. He's struggling a little bit right now. Switzer was a C in this game, but there's some stuff I really like. I think this is like the third or fourth time I've given Switzer a C or a D plus or that range, but also complimented him.
Yeah,
in a big way.
You've liked him.
I think there's a lot that, like, if I was evaluating Switzer for my team, I would sign Switzer.
Okay,
he fits the role of offensive lineman that I like.
All right, Morgan Moses.
I think Morgan Moses played very well in this game.
You did not think he played well?
Which is really weird to me because PFF graded him the fourth highest on the offense.
Okay.
At a 77.1.
Yeah.
Too much ass block on a zone backside. Actually, this is a little bit more like Chris thinking about offense, but they have all these zone runs out of gun. They take a little bit longer, and the back doesn't get as far away from the backside. Right? Like behind center, he really pushes away from the backside, so that cut happens further away. Well, I've always been told on the backside, if they play behind you, you won. Like that's the Shanahan rule. If they end up going behind you, you won. So on a couple of them, Morgan is pretty much boxing out or ass blocking the defensive end. The defensive end wraps behind him, and then he comes down the line of scrimmage and makes a play. He's got to be, especially on some of the zone runs out of gun, he's got to be more physical with his hands. He's got to sustain it longer. It's not hitting as far away from him as probably he's used to. A couple pressures, beat by Alden Smith a couple times. God, Alden Smith's good, man. I mean, if you get out of position at all against that dude, he's good at taking advantage.
Chris, they're super underrated up front. They have a lot of team speed in their front seven. Dallas does. They're having a terrible season. There's no doubt about it. But I've watched them a couple of games here recently, and they're causing problems, including for Pittsburgh a few weeks back, including against Minnesota. And including against Alex Smith, they are super fast up front and can cause problems defensively, even though you can run the ball at them easily. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, we'll talk. Morgan was a C+.
Okay.
So when you look at this offensive line for Washington, though, they're underrated.
Right.
I think they're better than people think up front.
Yeah.
And if they were to get either Morgan back to right tackle and have a left tackle, or to continue to develop Morgan at left tackle, I think you have something between Switzer, Ruye, and Sheriff. Now, Sheriff, obviously, you got to figure out what you're going to do with Brandon Sheriff in the future, and you absolutely want him.
Yeah.
The complement of Switzer's been really good, and I think Morgan's a good player for you. If you don't have 72... And I'm not going to dog him as a backup player. Then that's what he is. I don't want to. I've been critical, and some of it's been joking. But he's still a competent backup. And for the most part, this line did a pretty good job of protecting Alex throughout this game. They really did better than there were some pressures. But
again, against a
good
fast
defensive line in Dallas,
yes.
Like, and they moved them in the run game. You know, they really moved and displaced Dallas up front in the run game and created some big gaps and some big cutbacks. I was impressed with what they did up front against the Cowboys. Really, I really was. I thought the offensive line did a nice job. And I think I said this to you like 3 weeks ago. I said, this is becoming a very well-coached unit. You can see that they're coached well. And compliments go to
Matsko,
that offensive line coach. Yeah, he's been around for a long time. But I think he's doing a good job. And he's also had to change a lot of techniques that they've had in the past. And you can see that they are starting to understand it and get it. And for me, like I watch Ruye and I watch Sheriff. those are the two guys that really, I mean, obviously Morgan too, but those are two of the guys that have really been a part of that pass scheme that were like tight hip downhill guys. And they're turning into lateral zone stretch guys that can still, be a vertical gap scheme team, but they, man, they're getting it. They're getting it. And I'm so big compliments to that offensive line.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was, you know, probably in recent weeks, the biggest challenge they've had in terms of pass pro against Dallas's front. Now, Pittsburgh's going to be a completely different story, and this will be the biggest test for them, and we'll have time to go over that on Monday, but the biggest test for them will be Pittsburgh's pass rush and Pittsburgh's defense overall. And it'll be a challenge.
Can I? Go ahead. Yeah,
no,
it'll be a big
go job. Ahead.
I got another direction to go real quick before we finish this up.
Okay.
Or when we're done. I just wanted to tell you about some part of my life.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that, you know, when you're up against Pittsburgh's defense and you're up against Cameron Hayward and you're up against T.J. Watt and you're up against Bud Dupree, and then they've got the secondary with Hayden and Fitzpatrick, et cetera, behind them. This will be the first chance, legitimate chance, where we can say they've made a lot of progress. They have been a professionally competent offense. The O-line looks underrated. The skill position players aren't getting enough credit. They're much better than we would have ever thought at the beginning of the year. But we also recognize it's been Dallas twice, the Giants twice, the Bengals and the Lions, you know, over the last six games. Now it's going to be two of the better defenses, maybe the best defense, and certainly two of the better defenses in the league over the next two games.
No, I mean, and you're going to find out, but just think of the advantage it is to be able to, as you start to progress through this offense as a player, as a coach, to be able to use these last six games to get better, like as opposed to go from Baltimore and then Los Angeles to have to play Pittsburgh. I mean, they really, I think, are gaining confidence.
Yeah.
And I don't care that they played bad teams. They're playing well against bad teams. They're getting better.
Right. All right, what were you going to finish with?
I'm going to leave it for tomorrow. I'll give you, ask me about a what do you got tomorrow.
Okay, we'll do that tomorrow. Thanks.
You'll like it. I've got a good story.
Thanks for putting it together. Are you on your way back to Wyoming?
Yeah, so I'll kind of fake my way through the defensive film breakdown.
Just watch two plays and then evaluate everybody.
So I'm just so you know,
yeah.
I'm going to watch it all. I'm going to be driving tomorrow. I read my notes while we do this. I'm not going to be able to do that.
Okay, well, just do your best. It's a week.
No, I'm going to do my best.
It's a week after the game.
You're going to love it.
And, you know, we know that Darby got beat early, and then after that, everybody played pretty well. Maybe we just did it.
Chase Young was an A. Chase Young was an A. There was no doubt. Montez Sweat made some big plays.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Kerrigan, I'm not quite sure on Kerrigan. Probably C.
Yeah, but Bostic, not so great.
You know, but Cole Holcomb's really—he's instinctual. He can sniff things out.
I want to hear about one specific player tomorrow, because it's very possible if DeShazer Everett's not ready to go, that we'll see much more of Jeremy Reeves than we will Troy Apke.
Yep.
That's the guy that I'm actually interested to find out how he played against Dallas, and Apke too, because I didn't think he was very good. All right, thanks. Appreciate it, and we'll chat tomorrow.